Welcome to Viewpoints Around the World and Look Ahead Radio. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by Lockwood Phillips, my old friend who lives in Morehead City, North Carolina. This week we're discussing American involvement in Africa. Why are they there? What are they doing? Who's there? There's a host of other events we're discussing as well. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon, of course, joining us, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin the program, just to remind you, you too can subscribe to LookAheadNews.com, and I would commend that to you. Go online and begin that subscription today. And of course, you hear Tom on Look Ahead Radio every Friday afternoon here on the Talk Station and on radio stations around the world. And with that introduction this afternoon, Tom, a good evening to you. It's going to be nearly midnight when this portion of the program airs. It's a little earlier in the evening for you there in London. And as I begin the questions, of course, I'm going to get into the issue of time here in a few moments. But first, good afternoon or good evening to you. And how's the weather in London?
It's lovely. It's absolutely fantastic. It's a beautiful autumn day. You know, it's the sun is shining. You walk around in your shirt sleeves. I always put on my tweed jacket this time of year and my trilby hat, but it's been lovely weather.
Well, now
as usual, as we know, it's always like this in Britain. Oh, yeah. Unlike there in the United States, where it just pelts down rain all the time.
It's either raining or it's very, very hot. And of course, the first World Series game was conducted last evening. The hottest game on record, I think it was 103 degrees when the first pitch was cast. So it's wow. Just, hey, listen, we have interesting weather here in the States. Okay, Tom, coming up in a few...
Can I just interject with a bit of American trivia?
Sure.
You know why it's called the World Series?
Give us your answer.
Because it was sponsored by the World Newspaper.
Aha. Very bit of...
It's not because it's an international series of baseball games.
Oh, well. Well, but then again... all the world's greatest sports are played in the United States, as we like to claim. So, of course, anything happening here when it's a conclusion would be a World Series. But that's a very interesting observation. And I'm sure that many of the audience is learning something as they hear this. Tom, let's talk about daylight savings. I mentioned time a few moments ago. And here in the States, we're going to shift our clocks back, for whatever reason one has to wonder, next a week from now, on the 5th of November. What's the status there in the United Kingdom? Do you all try to save daylight there as well?
We do, and the clocks are shifting on first thing Sunday morning at 1 second past midnight. Midnight Saturday, they are shifting 1 hour.
Okay, we will be paying close attention and, of course, adjusting our clocks as well for London time. All right, Tom, so much to talk about this today. I've got to start off with some of the breaking news in the States to find out what's the coverage there. Let's start with the reaction to Donald Trump's response to a fallen soldier and his family, actually multiple families. How is that being played there in the European press in the United Kingdom?
Fairly straight. They're just reporting the facts. Mm-hmm. And letting people, and they're reporting the tweets. But the BBC correspondent or editor, a chap called Anthony Zerker, basically said, when will Trump learn to stop digging mm-hmm. when he's in a hole?
Right.
That you cannot win in a fight with a war widow. That they have right on their side, whether they're right or not. And he should just, you know, stop digging and not say anything.
Well, what about the reaction from his chief of staff, General John Kelly? What was the response or coverage of his remarks to the press?
It was just reported straight.
Okay.
But you know, people will always side with the war widow.
Well, in this case,
grieving widow.
Well, in this case, of course, I think General Kelly was trying to explain what happens. And of course, he himself, a Gold Star father as well. The coverage of that initial event, I want to go to that as well. This, of course, the concerns in Africa and Niger. I've always called it Niger, but apparently
Niger.
Well, here they're saying Niger, but be that regardless. Pardon me. What's the news about what's happening in Africa in general, and particularly in this particular case?
I thought I'd do some research into the situation in Africa for this, and there are 500. Well, actually, there's 1,500 American troops mm-hmm. who are dedicated to service in Africa through an organization called AFRICOM.
Right.
AFRICOM is based in Stuttgart, at a place called Camp Kelly. And at any given time, 500 of those 1,500, one-third, are actually in Africa. They're almost exclusively devoted to training the African troops, providing reconnaissance, as they were doing in Niger the other day, and things like that. Now, there are also British and French troops. The French have about 3,500 troops based more or less permanently in various parts of Africa. Mm. And at times it goes up to as many as 10 or 15,000. They are much more actively involved in fighting when they're called upon to do so, and have been in that region, Mali, Niger, West Africa. The French are very active in West Africa. The British have about 1,500 troops, 3,000 if you include Gibraltar, which of course is just on the other side of the Strait of Gibraltar, so it's really quite close to Africa. So there is certainly Western involvement. They are trying as much as possible, and they have been over the past 20 years or so, to involve the African Union in providing peacekeeping forces and things like that to deal with the various problems that Africa has, which, as we know, are many. And so there's a big link up with the Africa Union, which has about 50,000 troops on peacekeeping operations in different parts of Africa. There are also organizations like the Economic Community for West African States, ECOWAS, which regularly commits troops to anti-terrorist activities in places like Mali and Niger. So that's more or less the global rundown of how forces are deployed by different countries and organizations in Africa.
Well, now, your research, of course, is taken as a result of effort on your part. I commend you on that one. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, we may have to continue this after this segment, which is coming up to a close here shortly. The question is, how much of the activity in Africa is common knowledge in the European press? I will be very blunt, and I'll go out on a limb, and I can tell you that many in the United States were really surprised and shocked that there's a lot of military action or commitment to Africa. How much of this is recognized and understood there in Europe?
Well, in Europe, of course, they've had many years, mm-hmm. hundreds of years of involvement in Africa.
Mainly because of colonization. I mean, because these were...
Because of colonization, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And as for American involvement, it's probably not as well known. Compared to other people, America has been involved for probably 20 years. Mm-hmm. AFRICOM took over from another American-run organization. Africa has always been just under the horizon as far as many Americans are concerned. You really don't give a hoot about Africa, it mm-hmm. would seem. Looking at the press and hearings in Congress, I'm not surprised that people didn't know about it. It's simply not been reported, and the Senate and Congress has never really expressed an interest. The number of troops involved compared to the number of troops in, say, Afghanistan or the Middle East or just about anywhere in the world is nominal. I mean, 500 troops on active duty covering 53 countries. Think about it.
No question. I want to get back to that right after this break. We've got with us this afternoon Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to continue the focus on Africa for a few more minutes here in this next segment and then move on to other issues. But I think this is an important story, Tom, and it warrants further conversation on your part. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with the expanded Look Ahead World Analysis for the week beginning the 30th of October. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Donald Trump is off on an Asian tour next weekend. The 10-day trip starts in Japan on Sunday before moving on to Vietnam, China, South Korea, and the Philippines. North Korea will dominate the trip, but Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan also wants to discuss rearmament plans, and the Vietnamese are focused on the South China Sea. Hurricanes, their impact, and the Trump administration's response to them will be the subject of a congressional hearing on Tuesday. Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands are estimated to cost $200 billion in repair bills. Puerto Rico was worst hit, and President Trump has been heavily criticized for linking the island's $74 billion debt to the reconstruction efforts. The problem will be compounded on Tuesday when the Puerto Rican government runs out of money. The CEOs of Google, Facebook, and Twitter on Wednesday testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee about Russia's alleged interference in the 2016 elections. The hearing follows a Facebook revelation that Russians spent $100,000 on thousands of ads promoting divisive messages. Hillary Clinton faces the threat of a congressional investigation into claims that her campaign paid investigators to dig up stories linking Donald Trump to Russia. Prince Charles and Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, will meanwhile start a two-week Asian tour on Tuesday. The British government is re-establishing links with its former empire to replace EU ties. The two-year emergency in France officially ends on Wednesday. It is no longer needed because many of the temporary provisions have become permanent. The future of Catalonia remains in doubt, with both the Spanish government and the Catalan nationalists reluctant to make the first move. And in Kenya, violence is expected after fresh presidential elections there. In Russia from Wednesday, it will be illegal for Russians to anonymously surf the World Wide Web. The Chinese have been advising Putin on setting up a great Russian firewall. The U.S. will be conspicuous by its absence at the UNESCO General Conference in Paris on Monday. The Trump administration withdrew from the UN's cultural body on October the 12th, citing anti-Israeli bias. Australia has set a deadline of Tuesday for the closure of the controversial Manus Island Detention Center off the coast of Papua New Guinea. The center has been the subject of international condemnation, and the Australian government has been ordered to pay compensation to nearly 2,000 mistreated asylum seekers. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We were just chatting a moment ago, Tom, about the absence of awareness and lack of awareness here in the States on the issues in Africa. I do want to focus on this for just a few more moments, and I apologize if I'm going too deep into the subject, because I know that you like to research this, but your observations about the number of military personnel that have been dedicated to the issues in Africa, and I want to talk about the issues just briefly and broadly, but if you will, refresh our audience's knowledge again about the number of military personnel coming from various European communities in Africa. This is an important story, and the reason is the value of Africa in the world politic and the world economy. But Tom, if you will, refresh us real quickly on the number of military personnel committed to Africa from other European countries.
Well, Britain and France roughly have about 3,000 each at the moment. But as I said, the French have a tendency, and the British do as well, of if there's any serious problems of bumping it up to as many as 10,000. Mm-hmm. The British were heavily involved, for instance, in fighting in Sierra Leone recently. They were involved in the Ebola scare, and they sent troops over for that. And the French have been heavily involved in Mali, Niger, Central African Republic, and places like that. And they will bump up troops and become directly involved in the fighting, unlike the American troops. American troops don't tend to be directly involved.
You know, this is important. Several things you've mentioned, for example, the issue of Ebola. And I guess my question first goes to the story and the announcement related to the death of four military personnel, Green Beret, Army soldiers who were trying to, I guess, assist Niger troops. That was not really, I'm going to proffer this as an observation, please correct it. I gather then that was really not a shock or a surprise to the European press or those in the United Kingdom.
No.
Okay.
No, I mean,
I'm sorry
to be paraphrasing Trump, but, you know, people go into dangerous areas and, you know, you expect casualties.
No, no.
You don't want them, you don't like them, but casualties happen.
Yeah.
In this particular case, this group, I don't know if it was these four men in particular, but certainly the group that was on duty in Niger had performed 29 reconnaissance missions over 6 months without any incident. Mm-hmm. And so they really didn't expect anything. They really thought it was a training exercise.
That's fine. And it's understandable. And I say that in the sense that we're dealing with a violent neighborhood and a violent area of the world. Very quickly, moving on to other items here in a moment, but this is important.
Can I just say, Lockwood, I've actually been invited to Niger.
Have you really? Okay.
Yes. The story which I've been trying to get you to talk about, the Great Green War of Africa, I had published as a column recently, and I had two invitations, one from the government of Senegal and one from the government of Niger, to go see it.
Okay. Well, let's talk here.
I might go to Niger, so I'll let you know just how dangerous it is.
Okay. Well, with you there, things will calm down immediately. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Tom, very quickly, I want to move on to other items, particularly back to the States. The events in Africa, are things heating up in Africa, or is it just this particular moment we happen to be very focused on it? Are things beginning to get pretty intense? And we're going to get to China here in a few moments, but I know that China has a great deal of interest and has invested a lot of money and personnel to Africa.
The Libya situation is stabilizing a bit. That was a big source of people for Al-Qaeda. The rest of Africa, you've always had a conflict running along the 10th parallel. That is 10 degrees north of the equator. There's always been a conflict between the sub-Saharan Christian communities and the Sahel region and the Sahara region, which is predominantly Muslim. And that has existed since the 16th century.
This is a very important part of Africa. We've got the Horn of Africa, Somalia, and those areas as well. Africa, though, is in fact it's a growing concern, is it not, among the European communities as well as other communities?
Well, it's a growing concern. It's a growing concern because of the number of migrants coming from Africa, and the EU is pushing billions into Africa, especially into the Sahel region, which is the North Africa,
okay,
or the Maghreb region, to try and create economic conditions where people will want to stay.
Okay.
But you've got the climate change is creating increased desertification,
mm-hmm,
which is a real tongue twister if you ever have to try it, as the Sahara marches south, and it's basically wiping out farms and villages and everything else. And those people are being made homeless or either trying to get into Europe or they're going off to the big cities like Lagos,
right,
and Mombasa, where they create problems there.
Okay. I want to move back to the States here in a moment because we've got to get on to a variety of other issues on the agenda this afternoon with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. LookAheadNews.com, remind you, as you're hearing these comments about Africa and other areas around the world, definitely worth the subscription. All right, Tom, let's talk about back to the States, the issue of Russia. And, of course, there's been a lot of concern in the European press about the Russian connection with the Trump family and this administration. But there's been new disclosures. coming out daily. Even the Washington Post is a little perturbed and discovering that, in fact, the Clinton administration, the Clinton campaign, I'd say administration, meaning under the guise of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign, were actually actively involved in the famous Russian dossier on then-candidate Donald Trump. And, of course, there's new disclosures related to the sale of uranium to the Russians and the role that Russian community has played through extortion and bribery here in the States during the Obama administration. Question for you, how much of that is getting played in the European press in the United Kingdom?
Very little. I was curious myself as to why. And so I phoned a friend of mine who used to be editor of a national newspaper and discussed it with him. Now, I stress he's no longer an editor. But he says that there's a sort of European, which is really a Western tradition. You have an election. Elections are divisive. People say things. People do things during those elections. And as long as they don't break the law, you know, it's expected to be divisive. It's expected to, in fact, that's part of it, is to divide people so that they can make a choice. But when the election is finished, then what's supposed to happen is the country's supposed to come behind the winning candidate. And that in Europe, quite often, the defeated candidate retires from public life.
Right.
And the reason they retire from public life is so that they're no longer a focal point for the people who voted for them.
Right, right.
When they retire from public life, at the same time, the person who won, it's sort of understood that they stop attacking them.
This is not an attack. Wait a second, Tom. This is not an attack on the part of this administration.
Are you going to tell me that Mr. Trump has not been attacking Hillary Clinton?
This is
because
a disclosure.
That is certainly fake news.
No, it is not an attack on the part of Trump. This is disclosures.
I'm saying,
wait a second.
Trump has been attacking.
No, wait. This is because
this country.
Well,
has
wait
an
a second.
Extension of that attack.
But wait a second. Hillary Clinton has not retired gracefully by a long shot. Number two, this is disclosures as a result of investigations on the Russian connection in the United States, which, of course, has been precipitated by that election. And it is interesting that there's new disclosures now, and I'm fascinated by this rather subtle and cavalier and casual approach to this issue of Russian involvement in the United States that goes back many years, going back to 2010, in light of the fact that you've got both Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, who's been very concerned about the influence of Russia, as well as there in France and in Great Britain and the United Kingdom. Amidst all of this, the fuller disclosure of Russian involvement, it's stunning that this is being dismissed there in the European press in light of the fact that there's all this concern about further involvement of Russia in elections there in the European community. I find it fascinating that the press is now seeing this as a remnant of the election, but not having to do with anything of significant military and economic influence going forward. That is absolutely stunning.
Well, I don't think it's being interpreted that way here.
That's what we're hearing.
And I think you have misinterpreted it, because I believe that the way they see it is a continuation of the terrible divisiveness which has struck the United States.
No.
And that the United States has to stop being so divided. The divisions in society are becoming very, very worrying for the rest of the world.
All right, we'll get back to that in a few minutes, talking about worrying and divisiveness. We're going to talk about Britain and Brexit here in just a moment on lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. I'm sorry, lookaheadnews.com, of course, is the website. Subscribe to Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com, and you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom has just unsettled me, but we won't continue the conversation about the Russian involvement in the world politic and, of course, the uranium sales. And this is really fascinating, Tom, what you shared with
us. I thought you were unflappable.
I tell you what, this is impressive. Let's talk about, you said that the rest of the world is very concerned about the divisiveness in the United States. Well, let's talk about warm fuzzies in the United Kingdom, particularly with Britain's effort to establish Brexit. That is the exit from the European Union. And your note here I find fascinating. Britain tries to divide and conquer in Brexit talks. Let's talk about how we all get along together. Tom, what's going on with that?
Well,
that's fascinating.
Look, if you want me to defend the British government on this, you're wrong, because I don't like the divisions in Europe either. So what's happened? Okay, last week we had an EU summit meeting. All the heads of government got together. And the purpose was to decide whether or not the British and the European Commission had managed to succeed in getting to the first base in negotiations. Mm-hmm. And they said no. But they're a bit worried about this now. They're worried, I think the European Union is worried, that Britain will go for a no-deal solution.
And what is that?
And if they go for a no-deal solution, mm-hmm. this is not good for Europe either. Europe has a lot of money invested in the UK. And if their factories, which they own here in the UK, have to start paying tariffs to send brake parts back to a factory in Germany to go into a German Mercedes, if they have to pay 20% tariff, that is also going to hit the price of cars in Germany. So they don't want a no deal either. And I think Mrs. May has woken up to that. And so the Europeans are sending out message saying, we're going to do something in December. We're definitely going to do something. And the different countries in Europe are starting to encourage the European Commission to get the skates on and make some concessions to the British.
Wow. Okay, real quickly, because we have so many things to go through, the future of Brexit, is it still, there was a period of time, Tom, when you gave us the inclination that concept that maybe this whole issue of the European exit from, Britain from the European.
I think it's still up in the air.
You still, a referendum could change this.
I think they're starting to back away from that, because the Labour Party has tabled an amendment to the Brexit bill, mm-hmm. Saying that whatever is finally agreed has to be approved by Parliament.
Okay.
Now, that amendment will probably pass. Now, that means that if Parliament doesn't like it,
they could
throw it out.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to a quick question related to Prime Minister Theresa May. Of course, we chatted about this several weeks back. There was an attempted coup to remove her from leadership within the party. Did not happen. How is the Prime Minister doing now in relationship to, Parliament and her own party?
At this moment, and it could change.
Instantly, yeah.
Yeah, on the toss of a coin, at this moment, she's doing pretty good. She's doing all right.
Okay.
As I said, at this summit meeting, I think she came out of it all right because she managed to get some concessions.
Okay.
Whereas people were thinking she was just going to be destroyed at the summit meeting.
All right.
So the expectation was it would be much worse than what it was. And so she's certainly on the up at the moment, but that could change it
second. We understand that. Let's move on to the events in Spain and the Catalonian effort to secede. How much of that is influencing, for example, the conversations between the European Union and Britain? And how is that influencing the economies and the politics of Europe?
Well, it's so fluid. It's difficult to say. Some people say that Catalonia could have a bigger impact if it were to successfully secede, mm-hmm. would have a bigger impact on European unity than Brexit.
Okay.
Simply because there are little secession movements scattered all over Europe.
Okay. And what is the future? What is the future of the Catalonian secession in light of the fact that Spain has, for all intents and purposes, stepped in and has taken control of that region of Spain?
It hasn't completely taken control yet, and it's a bit like both sides are staring at each other, standing up over a table, banging their fists, staring at each other, and shouting, "You move first! Mm-hmm. No, you move first!" Because both of them want to be in the position where they can claim the moral high ground.
All right.
And say they were reacting to the other person's or the other group's high-handed politics.
Okay, now here's a quick question. What countries are stepping in to provide assistance or guidance in this? I see a note here that France is playing a role.
France is playing a minor role, but it really is a domestic issue. The French are playing a role. Partly because the French have a lot of Catalonians or Catalan speakers in the south of France.
Mm.
Catalonia is not restricted to Spain.
Okay.
It extends over the border into France, and there are 100,000 Catalan speakers in France. And they have their own secessionist movement, very much more minor. The Catalans in France have said, if things really get tough for you, people like Carlos Puigdemont, if things get tough to you, we can find a villa for you here in France to live in.
All right. We're going to move to other regions of the world here in a few moments. But for all intents and purposes, what should we look for in the weeks ahead? And what should we look for? Is there a possibility that the European Union will step in and try to bring some stability to this? Will it just be a matter of it's going to sort of play itself out and things will come back to the status quo? What should we look for?
I don't think the European Union will step in. They don't generally do that. They tend to keep
An arm's length. Okay. So
an arm's length. It's a domestic issue.
Okay.
They didn't step into Northern Ireland. They didn't step into the Scottish referendum.
Okay.
Things like that.
All right.
So I don't think the EU would get involved in that way. I think different national governments might offer, like the French government may offer, to act as an honest broker the way America acted as an honest broker in Northern Ireland.
All right. Let's move on. I want to move on to other items for a shortness of time. Very quickly, because I want to wrap it up with Xi Jinping. Thank you very much. But very quickly, Shinzo Abe's re-election in Japan, that caught some folks by surprise. It was a success. Was that not an overwhelming reaction by the public?
It was certainly, he did better than they thought, but everyone thought he would win. And the reason they thought he would win was because of the threat from North Korea and because the fact that the economy has been ticking along very nicely.
Right.
There are no serious problems, and nobody wants to rock the boat when you've got North Korea looming over the horizon.
Very quickly, because I got to move to China here in a moment, he's thinking about rearming Japan. How is that being received by the Japanese populace?
Well, there is a very strong pacifist movement in Japan, as you can imagine.
Yes.
Given their experience.
Right.
But Abe has been for some time moving towards rearming Japan.
Okay.
Back in 2014, he reinterpreted the Constitution, and there's actually been noises made about acquiring nuclear weapons.
Okay, so that's in movement. Let's talk then. Wrap it up here with about 2 minutes to go. Xi Jinping, now the most powerful man in the world, interestingly enough. And by the way, I was reading earlier today, may soon take a position beside the late and great Mao. Mao Zedong.
Yes, the That's helmsman.
Yes.
The helmsman. Now, yes. you if you remember from your student days, the thoughts of Chairman Mao, and they had his little red book. Well, now officially they have the thoughts of President Xi Jinping.
Right.
His thoughts have been elevated to almost deity status. On top of that, they've announced the Politburo and the Central Committee And he's made certain it's a lot of gray faces. There's nobody to succeed him.
Now, here's a
at the end of 2022, he's supposed to be replaced. It's quite possible that they will rewrite the Constitution and President Xi will stay in power. And his thoughts will become even more important.
What does this mean?
I say he's the most important man. A lot of people say he's the most important man. He has a big army, a big navy. He has an economy which is growing. He has the biggest population in the world. He has a lot of growing goodwill overseas. And so, you know, Chinese influence is spreading.
Quick question.
Most of it is positive.
I've got to interrupt you very quickly before we go to the break. There have been some recent stories about the reaction of the Chinese government against dissidents. Have you seen any of those stories in the press there in the United Kingdom?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And
basically, when I say, you know, there's a growing reservoir of goodwill, it's within the context of a worry about the authoritarian leanings of the state.
I would think more than a worry, I would use the word fear. We've got to take a quick break on that last remark on my part with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As always, to remind you, you can subscribe to LookAheadNews.com. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. They call it managed democracy. Another term is an illiberal state. It is a political, philosophical term that has emerged from Central and Eastern Europe to describe political systems whose leaders claim democratic credentials while suppressing dissent. Degrees of managed democracy have become the order of the day in Russia, Turkey, Hungary, Romania, the Czech Republic, Bulgaria, and Slovakia. It is also finding adherence elsewhere in the democratic world, where politicians and their supporters are frustrated by the slow turning wheels of traditional representative government. At the heart of this new system are free and fair elections, and they are scrupulously so. Election observers are invited to scrutinize every poll. Ballot papers are carefully printed, distributed, and counted. The result is announced, and the winner takes all. From the moment that a new government is elected, the managed element takes over with a vengeance. Government-appointed judges pack the courts along with the top positions in the military and police. Senior positions in the universities change hands. Opposition media is either barred from press conferences, terrorized, delicensed, denied advertising revenue, or its senior figures are thrown into prison on trumped-up charges. The political opposition is marginalized, and when elections come around again, the government is guaranteed a pole position because of its stranglehold on the levers of power. Over a few elections, the word democracy is dropped from the political vocabulary, and voters are left with a state which is managed for a shrinking group of corrupt special interests. All the above is nowadays used to describe an illiberal democracy, which is why men such as Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and Turkey's Recep Tayyip Erdogan proudly refer to their regimes as illiberal. In contrast, the traditional democratic state has elections plus an independent judiciary, free press, active elected opposition, and an apolitical military and police force, all underwritten by a rule of law based on precedent and a respect for every citizen's rights, whether they come from the majority or minority political pool. The EU is meant to be a break on the potential illiberal leanings by its members. It is a democratic club with rules spelt out at a 1993 Copenhagen summit which declared membership requires that a candidate country has achieved stability of institutions guaranteeing democracy, the rule of law, human rights, and respect for and protection of minorities. The obvious disconnect between the current Turkish government and the Copenhagen Agreement has shifted Turkish EU membership to the indefinite back burner. It has also prompted members of the European Parliament to call for the suspension of voting rights and EU funds for Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic. This is allowed under Article 7 of the EU Treaty of Accession, which says member states must abide with the Copenhagen rules before and after accession. The problem is that everyone knows that Article 7 is a nuclear option, which no one wants to launch for fear that it could spark a destabilizing British-style exit by East Europeans. When the East European countries were pulled into the EU orbit, there was no long history of representative government. On the contrary, they had been Soviet satellites for nearly half a century. Before that, they were under the Nazi heel, or part of the autocratic Russian, Ottoman, or Austro-Hungarian empires. Democratic governments were few and short-lived. The main purpose in pulling East Europeans under the EU umbrella was to nurture the green shoots of post-Cold War democracy and push back Russian influence. Now it is the East Europeans who are trampling on the green shoots and threatening to march their illiberalism westward.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This last segment is always dedicated to something, well, unique, a little bit of a twist on events around the world. We're going to talk about two items. Let's start with an interesting story in Germany having to do with a panda. Interesting way to try to solve the panda's problems, Tom. Tell us about this.
Well, the panda is called Meng Meng, and she's in a German zoo, and she's having behavioral problems. She's walking backwards and doing things like that. Meng Meng is a teenage panda, and her hormones, they think, are going wild. And so they've prescribed sex. They're going to bring in a teenage panda boy and waive the rules about statutory rape or something.
Oh, my goodness.
And hopefully that will solve Meng Meng's problems.
Let's not go there in light of all that we've been covering over the past few weeks in the States. I haven't even asked, but since you brought it up, the story of Harvey Weinstein and the events associated with Hollywood.
I didn't bring it up.
Ah, yes, you did. In a sorted way. Is that story continuing to resonate in the United Kingdom?
Of course, it's sex. Okay. It's sex sells papers, sex sells television.
Yes, it does. All right.
Then it even sells radio.
No. There's very little on radio that qualifies for. But let's go to the final item of the day. Speaking of selling radio, we have Halloween just around the corner. Tell us how you celebrate Halloween, Tom.
Well, it's been imported over here by people like me.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Not everybody is in favor of it. And, they call it, it's a nasty American import, they say. Uh-huh. Those who are, stick a pumpkin outside their door. And if you see a pumpkin, you know that person will be distributing chocolates and sweets and all sorts of things. There's a pumpkin outside our door, and I dress up. And I put on a hunchback outfit and paint my face green and hang bits of, skin from it, like that.
Yeah, probably green stuff,
and
yes.
And when you come to the door, I do a... And then I lean over and I go right up to the little girl's face and I say, "Little girl, would you like a sweetie?" The result is they all run away and I eat the sweets.
I can appreciate that. Tom, very quickly, here in the States, we're looking at this has become a big financial investment here in the States.
It is here now.
Is it really?
Yes, all the shops are filled with decorations for your house. And, all the supermarkets have Halloween corners where you get this plastic tack. And you can put spiders' webs and all sorts of things around the privet hedge. It's quite a big industry now.
What's the chances of this becoming a major development for the European Union? I'm curious.
Why do you think? No. Britain's Brexit. No, staying in Britain.
Okay.
We won't let Europe have our customs.
And by the way, do they have Halloween in other countries in Europe?
I don't know.
I know this.
I'll be honest. I don't know. I get so involved working on my laugh that I don't have time to worry about the French.
Oh, I can appreciate that. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. And I look forward to future conversations with you, Tom, particularly post-Halloween and at another hour. Of course, it will be pretty much the same hour as always since we are pre-recording this program. Tom, good evening to you.
Good evening to you.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.